the Max, a podcast for leaders and entrepreneurs. Hosted by Fiefma Kramer.
Hi there. This is episode number one of the Max podcast. I have a very interesting guest. I made this one with care and love. And the one thing I would like you to do is subscribe to my channel. I will be very grateful if you do. But with no further ado, let's start the interview.
Well, it's really good to have you here, Hilke Faber. Well, I've read your book, Taming Your Crocodiles, and with the subtitle, Unlearn Fear and Become a True Leader. Mm. Taming Your Crocodiles, I really like the title. It's a very interesting title, and the book has even more interesting content for me. Mm. And as you know, in my podcast, it's my goal to collect valuable insights, information, and wisdom for curious leaders. So I know you are curious as well. So you're a perfect guest for me.
Great. Well, it's great to be amongst the curious today.
Yeah. Thank you. So I'm honored to have you here. So let's start with you.
Okay.
From a successful, ambitious consultant long time ago, working in the New York City, almost a monk, and now you're a business consultant and author. Mm-hmm. You're not a business consultant, but business coach and an author of your book, of course. So tell me what happened.
Well, one thing led to the next. Mm-hmm. You know, that's in the summary. When my life goes well, I really follow it. I follow mm-hmm. life. When things don't go so well, I don't follow life very well.
Mm-hmm.
So I was born on a farm in the north of the Netherlands in Friesland, and I learned there a lot about discipline and like being able to bike against the wind mm-hmm. and having a purpose. You know, getting on time to school and things like that. Hard work, and that was beautiful. And I was a really driven person.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always searching for something, always searching. And part of the search led me to New York City.
Mm-hmm.
The year before I got to New York City, or 2 years before, 3 years before, I was in Israel working at the kibbutz. And I remembered going to Jerusalem. And I was very touched by that, like the depth of that land, like the land has so much depth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when I came for the first time to New York City, I was sitting in this Greyhound bus looking at the skyline of Manhattan, and I saw these big towers against this September fallish sky, dark blue sky, perfectly blue skies they have there sometimes, or often. And I was like, so something in me was like, oh, that is where it's at.
Yeah,
I need to somehow find something here and conquer something here. And it's like walking up a mountain, right? I thought what I needed to find was importance and prestige and money.
Mm.
And as I was looking for that quite aggressively, I hit a wall.
Yeah.
And the Cherokees have this beautiful saying, listen to the whispers, so you don't have to hear the screams. So I didn't hear the whispers, but I heard the scream, and my scream was insomnia. I sometimes didn't sleep for an entire week. And
mm-hmm.
and then in that process, when I was like, ha, something is not quite on anymore, I discovered meditation.
Okay.
And I became very interested in that because I suddenly could sleep again.
Mm.
And that sense of like, wisdom, peace. I was like, oh, I want this. So I almost became a monk because I had this kind of extreme personality in me that says, let's do this.
Against the wind.
Against the wind, right? I got to do the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, you don't live very far from Texel, this island in the north of Holland.
Yeah.
And as a kid, when I would go there with my family, I would almost force them to cycle this whole island, the whole 35 kilometers or so. For why, I don't know, but I had that sense, like I had to do it. And fortunately, somebody asked me, a coach asked me, like, what are you running away from now? And I discovered that, I saw that, hey, wait, you know, I don't need to hide behind the cloister walls. And so I started to become interested how I could do the end of what I'd learned as a strategy consultant and what I learned as a person, as a meditator, and bring them together. Because I figured that most people in the world work, and so how can I help them at their place of work access as depth within themselves? And that's about 15 years ago. And since then I've been doing this work of coaching, facilitating of culture and team and consciousness. And in the process, I've always liked writing. These books emerged. So, you know, and so it's like,
I know you had severe insomnia, so sleeping problems, and asthma as well.
Yes.
Other physical symptoms. And you talk about internal conflict.
Yes.
Yes. And I was curious what you mean by that.
So I think about today, where we are right now as a world. I think most people, most leaders, most human beings will experience some level of internal conflict, which to me means things are not entirely aligned within ourselves. Like, things are not all in agreement with each other, you know? I may have, you know, so at the time, my internal conflict was my little voice inside, my intuitive voice said, you need to be doing something else, and you need to live differently, and you need to relate to others differently, and you need to listen to the kinder part of you that is not so hard and perfectionistic and all that, all these shells, like listen to that. But there was another part of me is like, well, I'm too busy for that. You know, I got a career to do. I got to, you know, buy this apartment in New York City. I got this big bonus ahead of me, and I got this whole jet setting life that I'm, this whole scorecard that I had construed in my head. And so that was the internal conflict between the very patient, quiet voice that didn't let up. You know, the quiet voice is like a mountain. It doesn't stop. And then but the noise can be so intense that I couldn't hear the mountain.
Okay, so what do you mean that it was a moment that you had to be truthful, more truthful of yourself?
Yes.
That's the moment, okay, yeah.
Yes, okay. And that to me is not like that's an event, and it's also an attitude. Like I can ask myself, how can I be more truthful today? You know? It's being truthful is a verb. Like, how can I be more truthful today? And that unleashes within a leader all kinds of insight. Like, how can I be more respectful and gentle and empathetic to my colleagues? For example, in the COVID time, like that, right? Yeah. At the same time, how do I stay firm and take care of business? How do I do this? Right?
Yeah.
So like, I want to give you sort of an example of like a truthful, you could say everybody is always being invited into the next truth challenge in their lives. You know, it's like, you thought you got it figured out, not so much, right? And this happens within companies where people grow up as team leaders to et cetera. And it also happens at the macro scale. So I was driving down the other day from Seattle to Phoenix, Arizona. And, you know, there's all these beautiful landscapes that I was driving through. And at the same time, I was listening to a book on tape, or that's old fashioned, but you know, one of these things, I don't know. It's on an app.
Yeah. Okay.
And the book was called Life Inc. And it talked about the corporatization of our society, how everything is about money.
Yeah.
And I started to ask myself, like, how much am I still driven by money and having to prove myself through money? And I got really sad.
Yeah.
At the same time, I got uplifted by the beautiful natural landscapes, which to me are like a mirror of the deeper truth within me. And at the same time, that very tough question was in my mind. And so to me, it was about how can I be with that question as a journey?
Yeah.
So that to me is like how to being truthful.
Yeah. So was that also the turning point of for you to really change your course of life, or was it another moment?
Well, so the trip to Phoenix just happened 2 days ago or 3 days ago.
Oh, okay.
So maybe this is another turning point.
Yeah.
It could be another turning point. Yes. So we'll see. The insomnia definitely led me to a turning point. The meditation basically guided, I was guided to meditation by insomnia. You can call it fierce grace.
Mm.
Like, you know, come on, this way, that.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't stay in the meditation totally. I mean, that was at first. It was your urge to become a monk. But I believe that you told me or told in the book or somewhere is that you decided not to because you realized it was more like a avoidance or escape. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's a little bit like, you know, we have these, as leaders and human beings, we have these voices in ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like when you discover a new voice that you haven't listened to for a while, maybe it's an old voice that sounds new. Like maybe, hey, I want to be more truthful. Hey, I want to be more kind. Hey, mm-hmm. I want to be more gentle. Right now in the US, it's all about, hey, I want to be more about Black Lives Matter. You know that. And then there's this tendency to go all or nothing. So suddenly everything is about that. So suddenly for me, everything became about meditation.
Yeah.
And then the extreme was pulled back into the whole, because that wasn't in integrity either.
No.
That to be an alignment of studying the truth of being and then being of service and trying to find a way to help leaders with that where they are.
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah. So let's talk about your book.
Okay.
Because one of the things you talk about is the difference between the crocodile and the owl. So can you tell us a little bit about the difference and what you mean about with the crocodile and with the owl?
Okay. Thank you for that. So first I invite us to hold these symbols lightly.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an orthodoxy, it's a pointer. Mm-hmm. And like they say in Zen, don't mistake the finger pointing to the moon for the moon itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply a pointer.
Mm-hmm.
So I was given these pointers by somebody who coached me. And he kept asking me after I came in with a challenge and was talking la 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 la. And he'd ask me, so who's talking right now? The owl or the crocodile? And I went, probably the crocodile. And what the crocodile points to is our more primitive consciousness, which in neuroscience is often associated with the amygdala.
Mm-hmm.
And that part of our limbic brain that is in fight, flight, freeze, ready mode, always ready for danger, not only physical, more importantly in our day-to-day emotional danger to our sense of self, our sense of ego identity.
Mm-hmm.
And so the crocodile is that for me a catch-all for that whole construct within us that can take up a whole life, can take up our whole mind.
Yeah.
It produces one movie, one trance after the other. I have to be perfect, and therefore I'm good. I have to please you. I have to be competent. I have to know the answer. Like, for example, my crocodile hearing the question of, are you spending still a time of your time and attention and money, says, you are bad. You've got to fix this now. You know, go rescue the world.
So those are the the old patterns, the old scripts?
Yes, yes, the old scripts. The old scripts.
Okay. The whole
enchilada of scripts, you could say the shrouds, the veils, that are just like clothing, useful because they keep us warm, right? They help us at some stage. Like even I have to be perfect has a function. Because it provides a sense of drive at some point. Mm-hmm. But then at some point you can let that go because being perfect then gets in the way of relating to each other, for example.
Yeah.
In my case, relating to myself and others.
Yeah.
So that's to me is the crocodile. It's like that whole in our inner self, in ourselves, the part of us that is driven by fear.
Yeah.
To put it simply, driven by fear.
Okay.
That's the crocodile. And then the owl is the part of us that is, you could say, our true self, which you could say is manifesting, is coming, expressing itself as wisdom, as compassion, and as the most beautiful things that we can have and express as a leader and as a human being.
Yeah. So I can imagine that the crocodile, what kind of fear it is, I don't know, it depends, is a more impulsive emotion. And owl only comes up maybe after meditation or breathing or slowing down.
Yeah. So So the meditation helps with this. Running helps with this. Taking a look in nature helps with this. Talking, having a good conversation, like speaking with you, helps with this. It's the owl is, you could say, our true nature.
Yeah.
And it's a symbol for our true nature that we can then express as a leader in, for example, living our values, being in integrity with our values. And we don't need meditation for that. We can, but meditation is not a requirement. There's many other ways you can do it.
So do you happen to have an example of how that works in a corporate situation or maybe clients you had?
Yes. So I'm thinking of a leader of a customer support organization in a large Fortune 500 company, right? And I'm going to protect the identity. So I'm going to say some things about this person that are a composite of a few people to protect the person's identity. So the challenge that that she faces is that she is in a very large matrix organization, and the other parts of the organization are not used to customer support having any big role. Mm-hmm. Like we also have customer support.
Mm-hmm.
However, she has been given the mandate to make sure that customer service actually becomes one of the core features of the brand.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so on a micro scale, this means that she has a lot of uncomfortable conversations to have with her peers in this company.
Yeah.
Some of them are like supporting her and some of them are not.
Mm-hmm.
So then how does she interact with the people that are not? Right? So the crocodile in her might say, these people don't get it. They don't understand. This company will fail if customer service doesn't get its act together.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So I'm going to make them look foolish. For example, in a meeting by just being very clever or by just coming with the perfect presentation. And she's very smart, so she can do all these things. Mm-hmm. She's actually quite trained in them. Now, if she does that, she would be driven by fear.
Yeah.
A fear of, for example, failing.
Yeah.
Or of losing respect. And paradoxically, when she gives into the fear of failing, or losing respect, she fails and loses respect by falling into these behaviors. We call it the fear paradox.
Yeah. Right?
And it's an interesting thing that the more we give into our fear, so for example, a big fear I have is a fear of abandonment. So the more I give into the more I give into the fear of abandonment, yeah?
Yeah.
I start to manipulate and micromanage and please all kinds of masks. And you don't see Hilke anymore. So what happens? People leave me. Or my colleagues don't know. Like a client said to me like 7 years ago, we love what you do, but we haven't met you yet. Like that, right? Like, wow. So driven by this fear of abandonment, I co-create abandonment. So that's the crocodilian situation. Mm-hmm. So back to this leader in the customer service organization, right? So there she is. She doesn't only have crocodilian tendencies. She noticed these.
Mm-hmm.
And she notices these, like many of them notice them because they're like you said, they're like urgent. They're like that.
Yeah.
And they're like this react, it's reactive. And instead of reacting, she can choose to press the inner pause button and come back to this very foundational question. Who do I truly choose to be? What am I truly about at the core?
Yeah.
Like, what am I? And that might be something about, at the very deep level, sounds weird in a corporate context, unconditional love. Acceptance, firmness, courage, respect. And from that ground, you could say, which requires some depth and introspection, she interacts with these colleagues that are not yet on board with a very different way. She may ask them questions. She may activate the owl by asking them questions, by sharing some, like, balancing what we call yin and yang, yin being very kind of open and yang very firm.
Mm-hmm.
Like she may like be like, okay, tell me more what you need, and firmness, yang, purposeful, and I like to share with you why we do what we do and why I cannot agree with the current state. So that's a brief example.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Because you say, well, then it's even more important to be aware of your urges and your typical fears, because I think everybody has his favorite fears, because well, you say there are 7 different fears actually. So I read about it and I thought, oh, you know, just before I started this podcast, I really had a swimming pool full of crocodiles because, you know, oh, I had a lot of doubts in shall I do the podcast in English or in Dutch? And well, my crocodiles all said, do it in Dutch. Don't do it in English, you know. Otherwise, maybe people will think something about it. And, you know, a lot of people said, well, are you sure your English is good enough? Because otherwise you make a fool out of yourself. And I said, yes, maybe that's true. And those are all the crocodiles I've met. So it took some time before I really, reached out to my owl. And it's so funny, because if it really happens, then it's very peaceful.
Yes.
Then you think, well, I'm just going to do it this way because it feels, it feels the best I can do. So that's great. So
What a great example.
Yeah, thank you.
Like the peace of the owl.
Yeah.
Like my coach said, we bring the crocodile under the aegis, the protection.
Yeah.
The guidance of the crocodile under the aegis protection of the owl. So it's not that it's wrong. It's like, I have the swimming pool, but I don't need to go into the swimming pool.
No.
Or if I do, I remember that I'm not the crocodile or the swimming pools. I'm simply the owl, the wise awareness like a good mother or father holding it all.
Yeah, great.
In the East, they came up with seven chakras, which are basically seven energy points within the body, like in acupuncture, seven points. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what you call it. And then Maslow actually also spoke about those in his hierarchy of needs.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the hierarchy of needs is a Western description of the chakras. Of course, he wouldn't say chakras because when he came up with that, that would have been a really blasphemy word. You couldn't say that. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So he had to think about this credibility. That's an invitation I make, right? So the first motivation that we seem to have as human beings, Maslow talks about as well, is we want to survive.
Yeah.
So with that comes the fear of not surviving and therefore the fear of scarcity, of not having enough.
Yeah.
And that shows it's up is a very basic fear, which is at, and you can feel it like in the bottom part of your torso. And it's about, I feel unsafe. I got to worry. I got to overwork. I've got to make sure that it all goes in a good way. Otherwise things might really not end up for me.
Mm.
And especially in COVID-19 time, this is very activated for many of us.
Sure.
And we can see it in ourselves that we've been pulled into this kind of not so healthy behaviors.
Yeah.
Like short-term thinking, for example, rushing to solutions.
Yeah.
Like very crocodilian. So then let's say we have this motivation of survival taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Then, hey, we like this human being that says, hey, I'm not here. I like some sense of belonging. I don't like being here by myself.
Yeah.
So I start to think about wanting to have relationships, relating to others. And with that comes fear number two, which is the fear of abandonment.
So right? That's yours.
I have all seven, but that's a very strong one for me.
Yes. Yeah.
Often shows up in the butterfly part of the body, the belly.
Also
where you fall in love and all that.
Oh.
That connection, intimacy, all that is there, right? So I'm from that place, I might try to please you.
Mm.
Or stay with my tribe or become very tribal.
Yeah.
Within the US, you see that very strongly right now, and in other parts of the world as well. Very strong activation.
Do you think that the second one and the effect it has is also that people withdraw? You see a withdrawal because they don't want to risk abandonment.
Exactly. Withdrawal, it's like withdrawing, like in my clique.
Yeah.
Like it's my family, my tribe, my family, my corporation, my team.
Mm.
You see, like this manager I talked about had to deal with that too.
Yeah.
All these other leaders having a fear of being abandoned from their clique, like the clique that they knew so well. So they had to really step out of their silos. The company that's called the silo, step out of it, right?
Yeah.
So that's number two.
Mm-hmm.
Number three is then the like once I've got some belonging and my survival, then I might also have a motivation to be something in the world, to do something with my life. So then self-esteem becomes important.
Okay.
And with that comes the fear of failure.
Yeah.
Right. And so from that you can have all kinds of things. I might try to control things very much, for example. And then so now I'm kind of in the solar plexus part of the body, and then I can move up in the body to motivation number four, saying, let's say I've got survival, relationships, and my sense of self pretty well taken care of. I might start to get bored. It's like I become curious about the world around me.
Mm-hmm.
I want to understand more, and like you could say, I open my heart. I start to be interested in, like, the heart is a powerful part, area of the body that connects us to everything else, right? The word courage comes from heart. Courage has to do a lot with me in relationship with other, challenge or other. So it's opening myself to life.
Yeah.
Right? So that, now I'm going to have to face a fear of uncertainty because life is a freaking catastrophe at times, you know? So that's number four. And then once I have some sense of that, and of course it's not all sequential, but we can think about it like as a symbolic story of development, I might think about, well, I've discovered some things. I also have a point of view. And there's some things that I would like, we like to leave the world better than we found it or be of value. Yeah. And this is where number five, with my throat, I want to express myself, comes in. And with that comes the fear of hurt.
Okay.
Because people may not like what you have to say. And again, these fears are kind of symbolic and not exact. So it's wherever you feel contraction, it's not so much that we understand exactly how they work, because these words are just like expressionist paintings helping to say, oh, I may have a contraction. All we're saying is like, okay, so you have a contraction now. How can you let that go?
Yeah.
It's more about the letting go than like naming the garbage. And then number six is the sixth motivation is to, for me, is like, okay, so now I've made a contribution. I may start to make a contribution to the world. And as I start to move, I start to see that everything is connected to everything else. And it's confusing and it's fascinating. And I have an innate desire for harmony. Now you think about music. We have an innate desire for harmony. We love harmony. We see it in nature, like a fallen tree. It's just as much in harmony as the tree that stands upright.
Yeah.
And we have that innate, our energy, like our at core of our being wants harmony. But then we get, when we really open ourselves to the world and think about it, like how complex our world is.
Yeah.
And then we may have a fear of complexity, which then we close, you could say, this part of our mind where we start to become very sort of solution myopic, or like I have the answer, like I'm the savior, whatever it might be, starts to come here. Like, it's like all paranoid. It's all going to be bad. COVID. It's all going to be terrible. It's all perfect. You know. All or nothing thinking, I'll stop because I know it's a long story. Then number seven, and then number seven, and I'll stop talking. So there's number seven. Number seven is about my motivation to really see who I am. You could call it enlightenment. Like I want to understand, I have a deep longing, you could say, as a human being, and eventually, or maybe always, to see truly who I am in the universe. What is this life for? And with that comes wisdom and compassion, but also a fear of losing my identity.
You first have to answer a first question, because otherwise you can't really give an answer at the second. The first is, who are you?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So because if you don't know who you are, it's quite difficult to answer and make a difference between crocodile and owl. Is that true?
So to make that simple, to me, discovering who we are is a journey. And I get glimpses more and more and more and more, right? And in the moment, on the journey of discovery, so to make it very, very practical, I think about this service manager again, right? So she can ask herself, and her colleagues can ask her, and I can ask her, but she can ask most importantly herself, throughout this whole challenge, who's right now? Am I coming from fear, crocodile, or from care, wisdom, compassion, love? Wow. Okay. And then she's in the next meeting, and the other person is like snappy at her. It's like not nice. And she might want to react. And it's like, fascinating. Oh, sweet little puppy dog. My crocodile is like acting up again. Yeah. Now, in the process of that, getting to know her crocodiles, she gets to know more of who she truly is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's a process of getting to know, of letting go. Like I like the metaphor of the Michelangelo and the statue of David in Florence. Mm-hmm. 'Cause he was once asked, like, how did you make this beautiful statue of David? Mm-hmm. And do you know what he said? I saw an angel in the stone and I carved to set it free.
Yeah.
You could say that's one way to look at life and mm-hmm. leadership. It's an angel carving project. And we all are the angels. And our task is to free ourselves. And we can use every challenge to free ourselves a bit more. It's like, oh, I've got some fear here, some rock. I can let that go. Mm-hmm. And I become a little lighter and a little lighter and a little lighter. And in that way, I slowly but surely mature in my getting to know and getting closer who I truly am. That's great. Befriending ourselves.
What's the third question? Because there are three, aren't there?
Well, I think about it not so formulaically. So, you know, who you are is an important question.
Yeah.
Like, who's talking is an important question. Another important question is this true? Mm. Like, is this true? Like, whatever thought comes up right now, is this true? Mm. Can you absolutely know that it's true? I find that a very helpful question too. It's like, is this true that I have to please you? Or like, you, for example, with this podcast, is it true that you can't do it in English? Yeah. For example, you
know? Yeah, that's true.
So we use the light of inquiry to free ourselves. Mm-hmm. And whatever works.
Yeah.
Whatever works.
Mm-hmm. Back to your book and your second book. Isn't it? Because you wrote a second book or yes. Sort of a workbook. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah. So I love writing. So part of the reason I wrote it is because I love it. The part of it was that in my own development, I find that I still often get tripped up or forget. Mm-hmm. I forget. Like something happens at home or with colleagues and I'm like, that wasn't quite on. Mm. I knew better. And what I started to work with myself was a day reader. So I read like a little page with a quote. Mm-hmm. And it's like a little friend. And sometimes I consult that friend in the middle of the day, often do it pretty much every day in the morning and sometimes at night. And it's a way to, you could say, right-size my ego and get back into truth. It's like, come back here. Come back here. So the second book, Taming Your Crocodile's Practices, is like a come back here book. It's basically 77 practices, short couple pages that you could read in the beginning, middle, or somewhere in the day where you want a little boost.
Mm.
So that's why I wrote the book. Mm. And yeah, and at 77, because I learned from my mother to forgive 7 times 7. I think that's an important part of growth. I love the word. I love this the number 7 in terms of fullness, and also the sense of infinity. So to me, it's like growth is not. Doesn't have an endpoint. It always continues.
Mm. Yeah. So are there also courses?
Yes. Yes. We have something called the Crocodile School.
Okay.
And in the Crocodile School, we train facilitators to become and coaches to become able to teach this work.
If you have one particular thing, personal thing, your most important insights for leaders?
Hmm. That's a great question. The gentleness is a true strength.
Great.
Yeah. Being gentle with ourselves, not a pushover, but being really open to ourselves, to all of us, all of ourselves, even the parts that are really challenging to deal with, mm-hmm. where we say, oh, I am like this. I mm-hmm. am like this. When we are able to be gentle with that and notice them and then be with them and move with them.
Yeah.
It's like we thaw, the ice thaws, and we become more ourselves. And then we can do the same with others. Like,
nice.
There's not a single person in this world that doesn't have a struggle.
Sure.
So it's like, so if I can become a bit more gentle, how can I become a bit more gentle? That would be the insight, at least, that's on top of mind today.
Thank you. It's very nice. Thank you. Well, thank you very much for this interview. I really enjoyed it.
Me too. Thank you very much for asking great questions and for creating a space for you and I, and also for the people who are listening to go
thank
a little
you.
Deeper.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me today. If you'd like to hear more about me and the Max, go to themax.partners and don't forget to subscribe so you won't miss an episode.